Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to The Food Fight, where we offer a different perspective on food culture issues around Australia and the world.
We'll talk with chefs, producers, business owners and experts to hear their stories and find out what makes them tick.
This is a Small Bites episode where we chat about local food and seasonality. All right, welcome to another episode of the Food Fight podcast with your host, Steph Postuma. That's me, alongside the South Coast kid, the Wollongong Welshman, Simon Evans.
Wollongong Welshman's excellent.
I know. That's great, yeah. I'm going to keep coming up with nicknames for you every time we do another Small Bites. Nice. So this is just another Small Bites episode to tantalise your taste buds
on the kitchen bench.
For your Monday on the kitchen bench at Simon's place. We've got the dog sleeping in Simon's room.
You won't bother.
And right, Simon's just bought a new laptop, so everyone's everyone's kicking goals, and a new car, so everyone's kicking goals. Killing new roles,
it's
new vehicles.
It's been 4 years since I bought a new laptop. Half my work got deleted the other day, and I'm like, I think I'm going to buy a new one.
Time to do it.
So, executive chef laptop.
Yeah, well, you need it. Claim it. We're going to talk about local food. These Small Bites ones are going to be max half an hour, and we just want to talk about food because I think sometimes our long conversations with chefs and things like that, they're a bit, you know, they're a bit clicky, very like chef specific and stuff sometimes, and people like just a bit more lighthearted stuff. Yeah, it can be intense. So we're going to talk about local food, and hopefully, I guess, like, this is not going to be too much in the chefy world, but maybe potentially geared to geared towards more of what of the work that I've done.
Consumers rather than practitioners.
So I think that, like, sustainability is obviously something that people care about, but when it comes to consuming local food, there's many different levels of local food, it seems, or there's many different levels of consuming, like, sustainable food, and that it all takes behaviour change. So generally what I've seen working for Food Fairness Illawarra and across different cookbooks, meeting local producers and people who run farmers markets and different types of local food systems, unless you have a farmers market at your doorstep, it can be hard to exclusively feed yourself with local produce.
Yeah, I mean, I think also is how you define local.
Exactly.
And that that very much depends on what country you're in. It's a slight segue from our last Small Bites. In the UK, local is a lot more local than it is in Australia because of the geography.
Right.
So local, like, if you were talking about, oh, we use locally sourced products, you'd be talking like probably like 10 to 20 miles away max.
Right.
Here, it's more kind of a general kind of rule of thumb is like an 100-kilometer range.
Yeah.
So there's quite a difference in that. But that's obviously just the geography of Australia and the sparsity of population.
What does that, but what do you mean by, like, if you're using local produce? Do you mean in the context of a restaurant, or do you mean like would you have a farmer's market in your village in Wales where it's literally all coming from that you know, radius, and where locals purchase their groceries?
Yeah, I mean, not every every village, not every town does. I mean, the bigger towns tend to have, like Carmarthen and Llanelli, who have a whole undercover market.
What did you just say?
I said two place names, Carmarthen and Llanelli.
What is that second one that you just said?
Llanelli.
I can't even make that noise.
Double L is a Welsh vowel, which makes the sound
Oh, so my it's God.
Double L A N, double L, L L A N E, double L I.
Can you say it again?
Schnessly.
Oh, my God.
So Schnessly has a little undercover market.
Right.
And then local growers will have stalls. There'll be a local fishmonger there. There'll be a local butcher. And a lot of towns have these little things, which right. you don't see quite so much in Australia. But yeah, they'll come within that area. So I mean, but also, yeah. So where do you kind of cut the line off in Australia? If is it in your region? Is local food in the Illawarra only food in the Illawarra? Is it the South Coast? Is it Southern Highlands as well? Is it, you know, is it New South Wales almost? Is that local if you're not buying across state lines? So it's a bit of a blurry one.
It is. I think that like one of the good ways to ensure you're shopping local, like. And one thing that Wollongong is definitely lacking, and it's something that I've been talking to Burble about recently as well, is a authentic farmer's market. We've had a few different types of markets here in Wollongong, but essentially it's just people that like buy a shitload of produce from a variety of producers and a lot of the time just from the Sydney markets and just bring it down and sell it for a premium at a market stall. But an authentic farmer's market is what you need to shop local, where the ethos of that market is that the people who are selling the product are the people that are growing the product and they come from like a certain radius. There's a lot of markets around there that don't have like a restriction on a radius or something like that, but like that's what the ethos is. It's like it comes from your region. Like obviously like if you're in Canberra, like you don't have too many bigger places within a strict radius. So like people who are from out in, you know, Yass or out in like even further out into the country and stuff, their major hub is Canberra. So I mean, if it's 150, 200 k's away, like, and that's their closest place where they can attend a farmer's market, like that to me is local food. I don't know, like I think radiuses are something that's difficult.
It's
like
more provenance is probably more important than locality, and they probably do feed into each other. If you go to a good farmer's market, someone might be from 100 kilometers away, someone might be from 150 kilometers away, someone might be on the doorstep, but at least you know where it's coming from. You know that they've grown it or they've sourced it from small farms who are hopefully farming in a sustainable kind of method, and that's more important than something being local. Because it's very easy to be tricked into local. You, like I said, you might go to a town market they hold once a week and just kind of assume everything's local. But it might just be from Flemington markets where, you know, Woolies source their stuff
from. Exactly.
Which isn't a bad thing. It's not like it's bad quality stuff. Like majority of stuff people use in restaurants will come from those markets and you supplement with small growers. But I mean, I've even like stopped at the side of the road when there's one like, you know, cardboard signs.
Yeah, the mango.
Like local cherries. And you're like, oh, where are they from, mate? And he's like, oh, from Sydney.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, where about Sydney? He's like, oh, from Flemington Markets. And you're like, well, like, that's where you got them. That's like that's like saying that shopping at, you know, the Coles in Wollongong is shopping local.
Exactly.
Because it's in Wollongong.
Exactly. But yeah, I guess like coming back to what the levels of local is like, there's a ethical food pyramid that people can look online where it is a guide to how to shop ethically and sustainably. And it's got sort of like down the bottom, it's like the old food pyramid was like eat the least up the top, the sugars and stuff like that, and eat the most down the bottom was like your lentils and your vegetables or whatever it might be. And this is the same. It's like shop most down the bottom. It's like a certified and authentic farmers markets, local veggie box systems, local food co-ops, and I think that that's it for the bottom, like, or community supported agriculture, which is a lot of the time just veggie box systems as well, but it just sort of works on a different model where you invest in the farm essentially, and you get whatever produce, you get a share in the produce that's grown. And then like above that is there's things like local groceries and small businesses and stuff like that, which some of the time we'll have, like if you, for example, go to Leisure Coast here or whatever, they'll have Roberts and Spuds, and they'll have like, they'll have labels on stuff that have local produce, like in independently owned, like greengrocers. And then above that, you have independent supermarkets like IGA and Foodworks and those sorts of things. And then at the very top is your major supermarkets, Coles, Woolies, Aldi.
Do they even deserve a spot on the pyramid?
Well, it's shop least, essentially. Anyway. Mm. something that I just basically harp on to people about is don't fucking shop at supermarkets. If you want to be sustainable and ethical about how you source your produce, do not shop at supermarkets, because no matter what they do or what they say, they really do not have the best interests of your community or of the environment or of sustainable agriculture practices at heart. They have profit at heart.
I mean, and they're probably, and not to harp on, I shop at supermarkets more than anything else. And it does come down to a time, a need, and an ease of it. But they have done the most damage to farming throughout the world than probably any other organization.
Exactly.
Driving prices down. The kind of... the vegetables aren't always just that perfect shape, and they are starting to do that. Like, it's like, it's a wonky cucumber. It's not quite enough. Like, the amount of stuff gets thrown back in because it won't pass the supermarket test is crazy in itself. So yes, they have done massive damage. There's some, you know, issues about price and cost that we could go into in another podcast, but yeah, overall, try not to shop at supermarkets.
Well, that's it. And it's also that seasonality thing as well, right? It's like you're always going to go to the supermarket and find every single item of produce you want, like, looking perfect.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, one of the challenges always when it comes to sustainable and ethical, you know, food consumption or shopping or groceries or whatever it might be, is... it's always just price and convenience. Mm. Like, they're the two things that drive decision making in all those things. Yeah. And to shift people's perspective on how they go about consuming food is massive. Like, it's such a difficult task because of so many factors. So some of them, like trying to teach people that you should not be eating tomatoes all year round or that you should not be buying X, Y, or Z all year round because it's got ridiculous amounts of food miles on it, could be imported from Mexico or the Philippines or wherever, just so you can have an orange or whatever. Yeah. Like, trying to teach people that is really, really hard for them to change. Like, what am I going to do without my tomatoes and things like that? And like, that's a whole nother conversation, is like, how do we educate people on seasonality and how to embrace it and how to cook with the seasons?
I mean, that's where the price of fresh food between a supermarket and like an independent market is not much in it. And a lot of time, if you're, you know, if you're going to buy asparagus, you'll be able to get Mexican asparagus or Peruvian asparagus all year round. And it's going to be really expensive. If you go to an independent market, they're not going to have asparagus because it's not Australian. So you're not going to buy it at the expensive price. When they do have it, it's going to be Australian. It's going to be cheaper. So there's actually, I think it's not that much difference in price with fresh food.
No.
But if you try and do your big shop at Leisure Coast, then, you know, your toilet paper is going to be more expensive, your toiletry, things like that. That's where you kind of get stung, and that's where the convenience of a supermarket.
Yeah, the convenience of having all the other stuff as well.
So I think the rise of the veggie box.
Yeah.
Maybe another COVID silver lining. I think that's a great way to get your stuff.
So, two of the best ways to shop local are, you know, proper farmers markets and veggie box systems. And in terms of educating yourself on how to eat with the seasons, that's the best way to do it. Because even if you go to an independent grocery or an IGA, they'll still have all year round tomatoes whatever you want.
I mean, this is kind of the problem in Australia. I do like this country, by the way. It seems like I bang on about how rubbish it is. So you can get Australian grown tomatoes all year round because we've got so many different climates here, but they're just going to be better when they're in the natural season, when they're not being forced. Because if they're grown out of season, it means we've got to pump a heap of water into them. And that's like our biggest resource problem in Australia is water.
Exactly.
So if you're eating things out of season, a lot of water and other things have gone into growing that, which makes them less and less sustainable.
Exactly. But yeah, so I don't know. Just going to a farmer's market is just something that I fucking love. Like, it forces you to buy to know what's in season, and then like if there's stuff that you're unfamiliar with or unfamiliar with cooking, it forces you to speak to the person who's selling it to you to get an understanding of how best to cook it and things like that, which is really cool. Like, that's actually like great.
But most of the farmers markets, so down in Berry and Kiama, like you can make a nice day of it.
Yeah.
Like they're pretty full on kind of little events now. Like
But the problem we face in Wollongong here is that like if you want habits to change, then it has to be accessible. Like people aren't going to change their habits to make a weekly run down to Kiama to do their shopping. Like, that's why we need a farmers market. Exactly.
The lack of you really can't. Like if you lived in Wollongong and didn't have a car, like me for like the last 8 years, you haven't got a choice of going to a butcher because there's no butcher in town. Mm. There's no fishmonger in town. There was Mitchell's Market. That was the only other sort of independent veg shop. So in Wollongong CBD, there's nothing. Like it's basically impossible to shop well for food. And that's a massive issue. I mean, Shell Harbour has a local fishmonger, local butcher in their mall.
Yeah, it's good point.
Fig Tree does.
Yeah.
But Wollongong doesn't. So we are massively bereft of that kind of setup here.
Yeah, you
kind
of need to go to other places. But yeah, I mean, then like I guess other ways, I guess we're just giving people tips on how to shop local here, people that aren't already in the know. But I guess the thing that I just keep banging on about that I want to, tell the audience is like just if you know that you're in the habit of like exclusively shopping at supermarkets just because it's convenient, like just try something different one time. Like go to a grocer that you've never been to before, or even just go to IGA. Like if you just need to do a small shop or whatever, find an IGA. Like I go to the IGA in Thirroul for like the little shop that I need to do, and it's got everything you need, and it's good quality and whatever, you're supporting your local economy. Or just try a veggie box. Like you don't need to sign up for that long. Like just get a veggie box in. We've actually got such great veggie box systems here in Wollongong. You just go there and you just pick it up and then you're forced to cook with what's in there. They can deliver it to your door. And then there's also that place down at the Dapto Farmers Markets. You can also get produce down there on Monday mornings. They do a little stall down there too. So just if you are in the habit of exclusively supporting Coles and Woolworths, try something different once and just make that little effort. Take your green bags and see how you like it, because you might find stuff that surprises you and whatever. But I want to move on to something different, because we're just going to bang on about how important it is to shop local. And I think people understand that, but like what we wanted to do was just to talk about it a little bit and give people some tips on how to do it. And I must also mention the Food Fairness Illawarra website that I worked on last year, that if anyone is listening who lives in Wollongong, it can be difficult to look online to find out what the best options are close to you. And so we developed a local food directory in that website that has all the local bakers, grocers, fishmongers, butchers, brewers, coffee roasters, farmers markets, even like food-related NGOs, places that accept food donations, places with volunteer opportunities, all that sort of stuff. And you can filter it by which region of the Illawarra you're in, and have a look at it. It's got like a listing for each of those different businesses. So that's that's the best resource to sort of check it out if you live here in Wollongong. But to move on and sort of stay on the same tangent, I want to talk about some of your favorite like short season ingredients. Because there are some gems out there, you know what I mean? It's like, or things that you get excited about when they come into season. Like, and I think asparagus is one of them.
Asparagus is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's so different when you get prime season Australian asparagus compared to the stuff that's imported. I won't use it if it's imported, because it's just a disappointment, because you get it, you cook it up, and you're like, oh, I bloody love asparagus, and you eat it and you're like, it's not worth it. It's not worth the disappointment. Asparagus is very short season in the spring, into summer. We had it on at Bangalay until maybe just before Christmas, I think we took it off when it stopped being Australian, and we'd let our providers, our producers know that when it changes, we'll change the dish. Asparagus is great. Like, tomatoes is the one you'll notice. Like tomatoes right now, you'll see all different varieties. You see all different color, heirloom, different shapes. And if you just give them a little squeeze, and you'll be like, oh, that feels ripe.
Yeah.
So yeah, tomatoes in during winter here.
To go back to asparagus, did you find any good local asparagus producers?
No, I haven't. It's always the logistical toll of I haven't come across anyone specifically who would be able to provide a good supply around here. That's not saying there isn't. It can be quite hard to work. For one, working with multiple different small growers is a logistical nightmare with your ordering. It was hard at Caveau, and we had a very pared back menu. It's even harder at a place like Bangalay. So we got to be very careful about how many producers we use and what we can get off them. So if you're using a single producer for 3 months of the year, just for that one thing, for one, it's tough to build up a relationship with them because they probably have other people they use for other things and they're going to get their asparagus. And also it just becomes a sort of a little bit of a logistical nightmare of it. But would love to.
If anyone's in the Canberra region, I don't know if he's still doing it, but there was this guy called Don. And all he used to do was grow asparagus.
Yeah, right.
And so, like, Don would show up every spring. Awesome. He'd be at the farmers' markets. He'd be at all different markets around Canberra and providing to different restaurants and stuff like that as well. And fucking Don's asparagus, man. Like, it was just the freshest shit. Like, and it was sick because you'd go to the farmers' market. It was old Don there with just, like, a Hessian tablecloth over a table and just a stack of bunches of asparagus.
That's awesome.
And
love that.
Like, and that's all he had. And he'd sell out every week at the farmers markets and deliver to restaurants, and it was just the best shit. And it's that type of produce that, like, people, I mean, and a lot of chefs and people who are into food, get this already, but like, it's that type of produce, it's that type of thing that really fucking gets chefs and people who are into food excited. It's like when you've got Don whose asparagus is in its prime, and you're like, oh Don, well, give me fucking season, five bunches, this is the sickest thing ever.
It's such a, I mean, so one of the things I like to do when it's in season is to basically shave it down with a peeler and have it as like a raw salad. So you give it a little vinaigrette and that just breaks it down. But it's so crisp and so fresh and so sweet.
Yeah.
But and you couldn't do like that dish or that little technique with imported asparagus because it's got like kind of bitter vegetal flavor to it, and it just doesn't work. So you can just tell the difference when you just eat it raw. Once you've overcooked the shit out of imported stuff, it's not that bad, but it's just not as good. Locally in season grown.
What are some other ones, Simon? Is there anything from back home that you remember would come into season and it'd be like, all right,
Lots of things, like even like broccolini would be a pretty short and sweet season, and we'd get it on the menus, a lot of it. Asparagus was always a big one. We'd get from like the English-Welsh border. Great asparagus from there.
Brussels sprouts.
Sprouts are a good one when they're in. Again, just a lot sweeter, a lot less sprouty.
I mean, it's been a little while now, but like, 10 years ago or however long, people always saw Brussels sprouts as this overcooked fucking boiled vegetable that tasted like the sole of your shoe. Once people now understand how to roast it, or deep fry Brussels sprouts or something like that.
Boil the shit out of anything green, it has a weird color and a weird smell.
But like, I'll give you another example of a cool producer who does it. It's Old Mill Road Bio Farm down just south of Maruya near Churros. Fraser Bailey and his wife at the Sage Farmers Markets every Tuesday. And when the Brussels sprouts are in, they sell it on the stalk. Because it just like, it looks like this weird fucking alien
people
plant.
People don't realize how Brussels sprouts grow. But also to the point where I didn't really ever think about how they grew until I saw a truss of Brussels sprouts.
For people who don't know, it's like a stalk like this high and it's just studded. The outside of it is just, it's like a huge daikon radish with the outside of it just studded with Brussels sprouts.
It's just kind of not what you'd expect. You see it, you go,
So you just buy a full stalk of them and they're fucking delicious.
That's awesome. Shake it off into a pot.
He's got them all. He's like hanging off the rafters of his stall. They're just hanging there. You just buy them.
I mean, things like, I get a little bit more excited when lemons and citrus are in season in the winter. Because for one, the price of a lime during summer is insane. Like $3 for a lime. Which is, why your cocktail might or should go up in cost in the summer. But you just, like, lemons are so much better It also means I can put lemon tart on the menu, which is one of my favorite desserts. And again, something like that, if you make that in the winter when lemons are in season, especially if you can get like unwaxed lemons, like if you can go steal them off your next door neighbor's tree or something and you make like a lemon tart, the fragrance you'll get off that compared to imported lemons in the summer is completely night and day. To the point where I wouldn't put a lemon tart on in the summer.
Yep.
Because it just wouldn't do its job.
Mm. And you're a bloody lemon tart connoisseur.
I love a lemon tart.
Simon, every time we go to do podcasts in Sydney or wherever it might be, if we ever go to a bakery, Simon goes, pie or a sausage roll, lemon tart.
That one the other day was really good.
Where?
In Bondi.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that's right.
Where was that?
Oh, it was just some random cafe when we were like hanging around after interviewing Nick. Yeah.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love a lemon tart. I think it's my favorite dessert.
Lemon tart.
If I was pushed, yeah. Got a really good lemon tart recipe that...
You'll have to make us one. We'll do some cooking show. Some
yeah,
cooking.
Yeah, some lemon tart making.
Might do some cooking, eh? I don't know. What else is on the list? We'll run through a couple more of our favorite things that come in. What about like on the meat or seafood side, like spring lamb or... Yeah,
lamb for me. I love eating lamb. I mean, you can get lamb all year round, but it's kind of something. Maybe it's a bit, as much of anything. It's the I don't want to say spiritual nature of it, but like that spring lamb. Like spring comes in, and that's lamb time.
Yeah,
and it has that kind of reverence of that's when you eat lamb.
Well, that's when what happens in Wales at that time? Is there like are the lambs like ducking for cover? Are people like holding hands, running, skipping through the streets?
Yeah,
like
yeah, I'm just
big,
loving it.
Holding big lollipops.
Well, you just see it because like in Wales, you're literally always driving just through farmland. Like so, you go from just seeing sheep everywhere to seeing sheep and lambs.
Yeah.
So I mean there's a sign, you're like, oh, it looks delicious, that little one, look at him. It's lambs is just great. I mean, that's when they're born.
Yeah.
Lamb season, and that's generally when I would put lamb on. I wouldn't put the whole point most time is if you get further past spring, they're not lamb anymore, they're hogget or mutton, which is something we should actually not even just here, even in Wales, and we have some awesome hogget and mutton.
Yeah.
Hogget is between. Like hogget is a year. Lamb's up to about a year old, and hogget is 1 to 2 years, and then mutton is 2+, yeah. I believe.
Oh, we had mutton on the menu at the last place that I went.
You can still get it.
You can still find it.
But yeah, it's harder and harder. It's not something you see in supermarkets.
Mm.
A lot of time it's better than lamb. It's got more flavor. It's got a bit more bite, a bit more chew to it, which I like a good mastication.
Yeah,
over my lamb.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing, there's a lot of seasonality around seafood and stuff as well. But oysters are one thing. I'm not an expert on oyster seasonality, but I'm pretty sure that it's sort of like just after summer, like towards Easter, where they're at their best. I think.
I think it's when the waters start to cool down.
Yeah. But there is a point in the year as well where you might as well not even eat, where they basically don't sell them in some places and stuff like that. But you check with, like, if you can get from local growers or if you shop at a fishmonger or things like that, like, it's worth, I always just ask what they're like at the moment, like at that time of year, because especially an oyster farmer, they'll always be very honest.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll be like, mate, look, they're not at their, sure. yeah, they're yeah. not, they're not, they're not at their best at the moment or whatever. Even like, you know, making phone calls and things like that, and just, you know, when's the best time of year to be eating this stuff? Because when you get them in the right season, when they're at their prime, and when because obviously the quality is so dependent on like the cycles of nature, you know, how much it's been raining, what the estuary's looking like, and stuff like that. That all those factors come down to it. So I mean, it is a question of seasonality, but it's also a question of other things. So it's worth talking to
where they've come from. Are different estuaries with different mewas, which is the oyster equivalent of tewa.
Yeah, right. So wanky.
Yeah, like, something about the word like tewa is pretty wanky, but mewa sounds just even more wanky. But it does make a lot of sense. Like we used to get three different. Three oysters from three different estuaries, and then we'd serve that as our little trio of oysters, and just do them just with finger lime from down in Gerringong.
Oh, bloody beautiful!
And, yeah, and then we could explain that this one is from this estuary and it's more creamy.
Which
one? From South Coast, so it might have some generally Appalachian oysters.
Yeah, right.
So it'd be, you know, this is from Marimbula, this is from Pambula, this is from Shoalhaven. Or wherever they may be, but generally on the South Coast. And there was very marked difference between them. Like some would be more salty, more saline, some would be creamier and very different flavors to them. Mm. So I imagine that at different times of year, those characteristics are heightened and lessened as well. So there's probably a lot of variation in it.
Yeah.
But again, if you go to a good reputable fishmonger like Harley and John here, who are actually the reps for Appalachian oysters in this area, they'll have awesome oysters. They'll be able to get oysters from various estuaries if you request them.
Yep.
Give you all the information about them as well.
Talk to people who sell you your food. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I mean that's the if you're into food, like it's quite fascinating, and if you go to places where you can buy good food, you can actually chat about it, and they'll be pretty happy to chat away about the food.
Yeah.
Like we found. We just rock up some places and like, let's do a podcast with producers, and they love a chat.
Exactly. Mm. Okay, well, let's leave it there for this one, Simon. There's plenty more we could talk about. Mm. Seasonality and local food. We've got a lot of podcasts on the way. Very excited. Plenty of stuff coming along.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much, everyone. Talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's Simon_Evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.